Also, a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be greatest. Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. You are those that have stood by me in my trials. And I confer on you a kingdom, just as my Father conferred one on me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And you have turned back. Strengthen your brothers." But he replied, "Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death." Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows today, you will deny three times that you know me."
Well, good morning. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Andrew. I'd like to add my welcome to Andrew's and to everyone online as well. I believe we've got someone from New Zealand today. Isn't that amazing? It's great that we can have the opportunity to share our service with anyone and everyone. I'd like to also say that it's really good, and I'm really pleased that I am not the only one who sometimes struggles with Pear Tree Parkway. And then you throw in some pancakes and you're really stuck, aren't you? It's good to have you here. Just to also remind you, if you've got a mobile phone, you can follow on the YouVersion app, which is on there under the events tab. And follow through, because I will be going through the verses as I share with you this morning. We're continuing to make our way through the Gospel of Luke, and I can confirm we are close to the end. David, I think last week said we can't quite remember when it began, but we're three chapters to go, 143 verses. 2,390 words left. So AI is good for some things. A number of years ago, there was a buzz of excitement that ran through the school, through the corridors, because they were looking for a new head teacher, someone to run the school, someone to take over, someone to move the school on to the next stage, the next level. Because the head teacher was retiring, they wanted someone to take on the mantle. And they were really keen to appoint from within. It was a school where lots of people had been there for many years, so they were confident that they could find someone who knew the system well, someone who would understand how things work, someone who could hit the ground running. And so people began to ask, if you know your schools, you'll know that this is sort of the way schools operate. Teachers get into little groups and they start to question, they start to ask and discuss and think. Before school, teachers would gather together. Who could possibly take on the role of head of this school? In the staff room, chatter began amongst many members of staff. It could come from anywhere or anyone. Who was the greatest? Well, they didn't say that, of course. But who could take on that role? The top person in the school, the head of the school. Maybe they were looking for someone who would be the most powerful, the biggest influencer within the staff. Maybe it would be someone with the most impressive CV, or possibly the most outspoken person, someone who would always talk, who would always be willing to share and offer suggestions. Or dare I say it, maybe they were looking for someone who'd already pushed their way close to the top, not minding who they trampled on the way through, up to the top of the hierarchical ladder so far. It was simply a race to the top job, the one that everyone, maybe not everyone wanted, but some people aspired to. You may recognize this kind of place. It might be in your own place of work. It's not everywhere, but there are many places where businesses and schools operate like this, with a top-down picture of management. And it's a challenge, isn't it? But do you know what? This kind of top-down leadership model is not just something that happens in the world of business. And leadership isn't something that just happens in work either. A massive aspect of leadership is the influence that you bring. And I wonder, who is it that you influence? Because leadership is a responsibility, whether we want to take it on or not, for every one of us. We're all leaders in one way or another. If you've been blessed or have had the privilege to be a parent, you're a leader, you're an influencer. You influence those children that you've been privileged to bring up. And there are people that will look up to you, whether we choose it or not. They'll look at the way we do things or how we act. And there'll be people that think, actually, I want to be a bit more like that. And they'll see you as a leader. People that admire us. It might be in our position in work. In fact, we don't have to just lead the people below us as well. We can lead above as well. It could be our role in the family. We might be the eldest sibling. We might have nieces and nephews that look up to us as well. We're all leaders somewhere in life. And it's with that in mind, I'd like us to unpack a little bit of Luke 22 and to learn from Jesus' example. There are three questions that I'd like to ask at the start for us to consider. What is the world's model of leadership? What did Jesus' model of leadership look like? And what kind of leader does God call us to be? So firstly, the world's model of leadership. Well, I've touched upon that a little bit. And this common secular model that we have of top-down leadership, where leadership means control, where authority is enforced, where status is protected. And Jesus is describing a system where leaders take credit, where leaders expect recognition, to be noticed, to be the ones at the top, to be celebrated, and where leaders use people to build their own legacy. I think it's crazy that how true this was in Jesus' time is so often true 2,000 years later. We see this same model of leadership over and over again. The problem with worldly leadership is not that it's harsh, although often it can be. It's that it's self-centered. It's about me. It's about what I can get from it. It's about how I can get to the top. It's about what I can achieve. It's about how many people serve me. How high is my position? How visible is my influence? Can I earn more money? Can I have a better car, house, better status, better position? And it's a model that had already seeped into the disciples' thinking. And it is in the world that we are living today. And sometimes it's hard to pull ourselves away from it as well. It's hard to extract ourselves from the world that we're living in and the life that Jesus calls us to. So I want us to take a moment to pause on a couple of questions. Firstly, where do you see that in others? Are there people around you that you see living that kind of leadership model? I'm sure there are. And secondly, is there some part of your life where you can see that? And I'm just going to say, you know, I really struggle with this. I find this tough. Because there's often this battle that goes on within me when I do something, when I say something, or when I feel like I've done a good job. I want other people to notice. I want other people to see it. I want to see that recognition. I want people to be able to say, wow, well done, Andrew, you've done a good job. There's that sense within us, often, where we want to receive that status and that position. I wonder if you can see that in yourself. So the second thing that I'd like to pull from this passage is Jesus' radical reversal. Verses 26 and 27. There's this upside down kingdom. You may have heard that phrase before, that Jesus demonstrates and lives, as we see in this passage. And there's a key verse that Jesus says. He says, but not so with you. And that phrase is everything. Because Jesus is saying, this is the way of the world. This is how the world does it. This is what it looks like for the world. And he turns to his disciples and he says, but not so with you. But not so with you. You're different. We're different. Jesus draws a clear line between how the world leads and how his followers must lead. But not so with you. It's at that very table where the disciples were arguing about greatness. Who is the greatest? That Jesus identifies himself as the servant. And I just want to remind you of that, what that really meant. This is Jesus who was at the right-hand side of the Father. He had everything, all power. And he chose to become nothing. He chose to descend, to be a servant to those he had created. Jesus, Lord of all, becomes a servant. And that's how he identifies himself. Not because he lacks authority, not because he's avoiding leadership, but because that is what true leadership looks like in the kingdom of God. Biblical leadership is not about position, it's about posture. Biblical leadership asks some really, really important questions. Who am I lifting? Who am I serving? Who benefits from my influence? It's this upside down model of leadership. Jesus turns it on its head. Jesus doesn't lead from above. He leads from among. Many years ago, when I was at university, I got to university, I found the Christian Union, and quite soon after that, we went on a weekend away. And so with a whole load of other students who I didn't know particularly well, we ended up, the boys ended up all in this room. I remember it being a very cold floor. And that evening, as we were trying, I was trying to get to sleep, one of the other boys, or young men, decided to ask a question. It was a really good question, but not at 2 o'clock in the morning. His question was this. He said, well, I wonder, in the world right now, I wonder who is the person who is closest to God? I wonder who that would be right now. And so a lovely little discussion went on. I generally kept quiet because I was trying to sleep. And then this is going to give away my age a little bit. Someone said, or perhaps it's Mother Teresa right now. Perhaps it's Mother Teresa. She might be the closest to God. And then someone else said Mahatma Gandhi, and someone else said the Pope. I think I said, perhaps it's Diego Maradona. But we threw around all these different possible names, and then someone suggested that maybe we don't know who it is. Maybe they're just busy serving God. They're living their life as a servant. And I found that really challenging, because I thought, you know what, we as in society and in the world, this isn't to knock people like Mother Teresa, because she was incredible. But she was a name that we all recognize and we all notice as someone who did great things. But a lot of the leadership that God calls us to do is hidden. And other people don't always see it. And it's not always recognized and acknowledged. Jesus invites us into thinking about how we can lead, how we can serve others. In your areas of influence, how are you serving rather than managing and controlling? What are you doing to give to other people, to those around you? Thirdly, leadership that endures suffering, verses 28 to 30. Jesus affirms something that is really important. Jesus says, you are those that have stayed with me in my trials. You are the ones that have stayed with me during the difficult times. He acknowledges their faithfulness, imperfect as it is. And he gives them a promise. He says, I sign to you as my Father assigned to me a kingdom. Jesus promises a position at the table. But notice the order. This is really important. The promise of position comes after the call to serve. The crown comes after the cross. And this is where we may get confused. We want authority without sacrifice. We want influence without suffering. We want the platform without the process. If you are leading right now and it feels hard, if serving feels unseen, if obedience feels costly, know this, Jesus sees it. I love how in this church we are really good at helping and supporting people to use their gifts. We have a great team right now doing children's and youth work. We have a great team who will be serving teas and coffees later, a wonderful welcome team. We've got people doing different jobs throughout this church, right now, and it is crucial that we have people using the gifts that they have to serve in the way that they do. And I want to encourage you not to see leadership as some hierarchical trophy to try and reach the top of, but an opportunity for you to serve others, whether that's seen or unseen, an opportunity to bless other people the way Jesus wants us to bless others. But it can be hard, can't it? It can be challenging, and sometimes it can be painful. And I want us to have a moment where we can just reflect on an area where it feels hard to keep going, where it feels hard to carry on, and just hold that before God and know that He sustains. Fourthly, leadership that follows Jesus must be humble enough to recognize that confidence is not the same as faithfulness. Confidence is not the same as faithfulness. And yet, this is one of the most beautiful lines in the passage. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. As Jesus talks to Peter, he prays that his faith may not fail. Jesus does not say, I prayed that you won't mess up, that you won't get it wrong. He does not say, I prayed that you won't deny me. He prays that Peter's faith would survive the failure. He prays that Peter would continue on in his faith journey, even though he's going to fail. He's going to mess up. He's going to get it wrong. Jesus entrusts leadership to someone he knows will fail. Jesus entrusts his leadership to us, to you and to me, knowing that we are going to fail. Why does he do that? Because kingdom leadership is not about perfection. It's not about getting it right every single time and never making a mistake. It's about restoration. Leadership, kingdom leadership, is about a journey that God has taken us on. Some of you may recognize these leaders from Old Testament history, Old Testament past: Moses, Elijah, David, Jonah, people that we often elevate and say, what a great leader they were. What a great job they did. And they did. Incredible acts of leadership. But all of these men were also failures. These are all men, and I could have mentioned many more as well, of course, who ran away from God, who ran away from others. These are men who committed adultery, murdered. In the world's eyes, complete failures. And worthy of being written off. We love to write people off in today's world, don't we? If someone makes a mistake, if they get something wrong, we write them off. But God never lets go. God remains faithful to us. God knows that in order for us to lead the way he wants, we have to experience failure. The greatest sportsman ever to have lived is, there's really no debate about this, but you can try and debate me with it afterwards if you want, is a guy called Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan came up, mainly because he played for the Chicago Bulls, which are also amazing. He came up with this quote that's on the screen. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I failed over and over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. There's a shot in basketball. You can Google it if you're sad enough. That Michael Jordan made. It wasn't even to win the championship. It was to win an important game. It wasn't even the most impressive shot you'll actually ever see. But it's called The Shot. So iconic is Michael Jordan that he has a shot named after him called The Shot. And yet he recognizes that he has failed again and again and again. And his success isn't built on the fact that he was perfect and always got it right. It was on that he learned off the back of his failure. He learned off the back of his mistakes. Praise God that he never cancels us when we fail, when we mess up. Because we need a God who is willing to forgive us. We need a God who is willing to stick with us and be faithful to us, and he is. Therefore, I encourage you to stay humble, trust God, accept failure, and celebrate growth. To provide you with some really, really important context, within hours of this conversation, Jesus is arrested, abandoned, mocked, and crucified. And yet, even then, he leads. He leads by forgiving. He leads by submitting to the Father. He leads by laying down his life. This is what it means to lead like Jesus. Not grasping onto power, not holding on to all the things that Jesus had attained, but by giving himself away, by giving away everything. So the question for us is simple but searching. Where has God given you influence? And are you leading like the world or like Christ? And may we be people who hear Jesus say, but not so with you. But not so with you. Serve rather than control. Recognize our suffering and allow God to walk with us through it. Remain humble. Trust God. Accept failure and celebrate growth. And may we choose the better way, the way of the servant king.